At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
The New World Report with Professor Evan Ellis of the U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute. I'm John Batchelor, and we go to the front page of the Wall Street Journal. Georgetown, Guyana. New supermarkets here are stocked with prime Texas ribeyes. A recently opened waterfront hotel offers executive suites for $750 per night. The national cricket team, called the Amazon Warriors, is getting a new stadium that begins construction next spring. What's happened? Guyana, once British Guyana, a small state, poor, very poor, part of the three states that are a legacy of the colonial past in the Americas. British Guyana, now Guyana, Dutch Guyana, now called Suriname, and French Guyana, still a colonial property. Those three states are in the news because of Exxon and an oil strike that the Wall Street Journal reports is the best in a generation. Professor, a very good evening to you. You know Guyana and the three Guyanas very well from your time at the State Department, and you introduced me to this tangle of the future and the past some months ago, and here it is on the front page of the Wall Street Journal because, as it once was British Guyana, there's now reason to call it Exxon Guyana. What's happened, Professor? Good evening to you.
Good evening to you, John. Well, when you look at South America, the kind of curving northeast coast, starting at Venezuela, it's long been known there is substantial oil in Venezuela. That understanding has deepened in recent years. But for years also, especially in the 2000s and the 2010s, there was a hunch that oil extended into the offshore, into what is Guyana and continuing around to Suriname. A number of companies have bet on that. Shell bet on that and tried again and again to find oil, but basically came up short. Then Exxon, using some new technology, basically struck it rich. There is oil find after oil find, basically starting in about 2008 when they started exploring, but 2015 when they started really developing the fields, and 2020 when the oil first came on. But the bottom line is it's just unprecedented amount of oil discoveries, about 11 billion barrels of oil in total. And what's remarkable also is that the country, of course, relatively, sleepy difficulties with government before fights for control between basically two ethnic groups, the Indo-Guyanese, which are slightly larger, and the Afro-Guyanese, but also relatively few people, relatively unpopulated interior of the country, only about 800,000 people in the country in total. Bottom line is that as this enormous new quantity of oil comes on, developed by Exxon, you're already looking at about 390,000 barrels per day. By 2027, you're looking at a production of about 1.2 million barrels per day, which would put this relatively tiny country in terms of population on the scale of Mexico and Brazil. So you're already talking about, something like $1.5 billion per year in money coming into the Guyanese government just for production sharing. So as you can imagine, both to the government and kind of the broader wealth that is generated has just transformed the country. In the past couple years, just last year alone, for example, the economy grew by 62%. And again, it's as the oil workers have come in, that's been new hotel properties, that has been new commercial real estate, et cetera, et cetera. Now, with that, there's been a couple different questions. Number one is whether the with all the money coming in, still whether the Guyanese government is getting the better side of the deal. When it was a pretty big risk for Exxon to take, they negotiated a pretty generous agreement if they actually came up with something. And so Exxon, the Guyanese government only gets 2% of royalties. There is all kinds of other relatively Exxon favorable dimensions to the profit sharing agreement. And so now that the money is coming in, there's some question of, well, did Exxon get a bad deal? And certainly, the question of, well, we're not going to renegotiate the deal because that would have a bad impact on our investment climate. But the new oil blocks that are now being negotiated post-Starbrook, there's actually 14 new blocks that were being auctioned out this year. The government is going for more generous terms. But again, the questions of oil, questions of environmental impact, questions of the ability of this government to have strong enough institutions to use and properly transform the country. Any number of different questions about this oil. And as you pointed out, also that oil has been found in an area that the neighboring government of Venezuela has some competing claims to. And so no great surprise that even before oil came on, but particularly now, they're pressing some of those claims in the International Court of Justice.
It just so happens that I was in Scotland at the time of the discovery of the North Sea oil fields. Aberdeen and Inverness are two big cities in the north of Scotland. This is the Hielands called. And in the spring of 1974, I was with a group who took a drive through the Hielands to see Aberdeen and Inverness. And my memory is coming into cities, small Scottish cities, as the spring weather is delayed that north of Scotland, and seeing young men in cowboy boots and cowboy hats sashaying down the street, just as the papers in Edinburgh featured the Texans are here. They really were there. This is 1974, so that's two generations ago. I can imagine those ribeyes in the initial paragraph of the Wall Street Journal point to Texas shows up. We've gone through this cycle several times in the last 50 or 60 years. Here's the irony. In 1974, it was all grins all the time because of what was about to happen for the north of Scotland. Money coming in, development, new cities, people, roustabouts heading to live in Quonset huts until they built housing for them. All of that did transform the north of Scotland for a generation. And then what we came across was climate change. And the climate change changed the landscape. You know that Boris Johnson, when prime minister, made elaborate promises in Glasgow at the UN meeting about climate change, about net zero by such and such a year, de-emphasizing the North Sea fields, not developing the natural gas in the North Sea fields. I tell this story because it's coming to Guyana's way. It's already there. The anxiety about climate change in the face of a poor, really poor, small, ignored state for several centuries since first the colonial masters arrived, that would be the Royal Navy. Now, almost like the mouse that roared, Professor, remember that movie from the 1960s with Peter Sellers?
Yes.
A little state that is going to tangle with big states, not the least of which is, of course, the United States and Exxon. So all of this promise today, I know I'm just throwing up irony. We can go anywhere, but where I want to go right now is what I saw happen in Scotland this last generation. What about climate change? What about the fact that Guyana, which is populated by people who have been marginalized in the United States and the Americas, are now well-to-do, extremely well-to-do. So are their children. There are only 800,000 people, and we've got 11 billion barrels of oil. You could assign several million barrels to every child born there for the next 100 years. So what happens about climate change? What happens about the protests? Did you hear any of that when you were in state? Is state hearing about it now?
It is certainly an issue, John, but certainly Irfan Ali and the government of Guyana, really neither the current PPP government nor the previous APNU government is about to forsake the possibility responsibility of this remarkable development over climate. And I certainly have a great deal of sympathy for the Guyanese position right now, which is, look, this is our ticket to development. Let us develop and we will, use the proceeds from that oil to also then become greener. And to their credit, they actually have done a number of different projects in that regard. Indeed, if you look at the internal, the timberland in the interior of Guyana, there is a lot of green space to be, to be recognized there. But, it's really come. You don't see really protests at all, in Guyana in that issue. I think it'd be difficult to find more than a handful of Guyanese who would say, okay, let's walk away from this oil in the way, for example, that Ecuador did just a couple of months ago with respect to the development of the oil in the interior of that country. But what I think the Ali government say is, that they're doing many different things through the Sovereign Wealth Fund to try to make that the oil development as environmentally friendly, and also use that to transition to other things in terms of their own internal consumption and generation of electricity. To its credit, also, when you take a look at the nature of Guyanese oil, it's relatively what in the oil industry they would call light sweet crude. And so even though it may be grasping at straws, the Guyanese can rightfully say this is not the high sulfur, heavy oil that you find, for example, in the neighboring Orinoco region, which is really the worst of the worst in terms of the contributor to carbon emissions from petroleum.
Professor Evan Ellis, U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute. We begin with Guyana. We go immediately to Venezuela because there's a contest here. The area is known as Guyana Esequiba, and it's contended by Venezuela, the very powerful and rogue state of Venezuela. This is the New World Report. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to Leaf Filter Radio, and the guru of gutter protection himself, Chris Counihan, is here to take your most pressing leaf-related questions.
Hey, everybody, Chris here. I understand we have Ron on the line. Ron, where are you calling from?
Uh-oh. Ron, are you calling from a ladder?
Well, I was. I wanted to ask Chris what I need to do to get my gutters ready to have leaf filter installed.
Oh, Ron, you don't have to do anything. A leaf filter trusted pro will come out and clean out your gutters, realign and seal your gutters, and install leaf filter, America's number one gutter protection system.
So I didn't need to get on this ladder?
Ron, leaf filter trusted pros are in your neighborhood and ready to help. Just visit leaffilter.com/day to schedule your free gutter inspection and get up to 30% off.
Thank goodness. What was that site?
That's leaffilter.com/day for your free gutter inspection today. See representative for warranty details. Promotion is 20% off plus a 10% senior or military discount. One discount per household.